Welcome to Blue Dot, a look at our place in space. I'm Dave Schloem. I'm fortunate to be surrounded by some truly magnificent and beautiful trees in my community in Northern California, from ancient valley oaks and giant sycamores to shrubby McNab cypresses. Trees are a wonderful part of my local landscapes. California is home to some of the most iconic and diverse native tree species in the world. There's so many interesting native trees in California that it's tough to know about all of them, but that just got a whole lot easier for Golden State nature lovers. Our guests for this program have authored a wonderful new book, California Trees, A Field Guide to the Native Species, by Michael Kaufman and Matt Ritter. Kaufman is the publisher of Backcountry Press and an expert on Northern California trees. Dr. Ritter is a botany and ecology professor at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, and his expertise ranges from the deserts to the mountains of Southern and Central California. Between them, along with their team of experts, they've produced a very user-friendly guide to California trees, from the iconic redwoods to lesser-known species that are well worth getting to know. They join us now to talk about California's native trees. Michael Kaufman and Matt Ritter, welcome to Blue Dot.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
And I'd like to start with you, Michael, since you're also the publisher of Backcountry Press. Tell us a bit about how this book project got started.
Yeah, so Matt's been telling me about his want and need to get this book out into the world for the last few years, and he's been working pretty diligently on it with some grad students and some other folks, which I'm sure we'll get into. Basically, it was kind of a great melding of two, I feel like, sources of California knowledge on trees. And, you know, I'm kind of in the Northern California area and have a propensity to share my love for conifers, and Matt is in Southern Central Coast area of California and is well connected with the flowering trees. So for us to be able to kind of bring those two knowledge bases together to cover the state and to cover both types of trees, I guess, we divide the book into those two sections, flowering trees and conifers, just really worked well to get this book out into the world.
And Matt, tell us a bit about yourself, because you're obviously very passionate about California's trees. Tell us about how you first got interested in trees and a little bit about your educational background. And then, like I asked Michael, what made you want to tackle this?
Sure. Well, thank you again for having me. And I am a botany professor at Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo, and have been so for 2.5 decades. And I'm a seventh generation Californian, grew up in Mendocino County, rural part of Mendocino County, and ended up at UC Santa Barbara, then to getting a PhD at UC San Diego. And then after that, moved here to San Luis Obispo. And growing up in Mendocino County, which is, it's a great tree county, great redwoods and great oaks, and always paying attention to that. And then as a PhD student, I got really interested in trees that were growing in urban areas in California. And my first book was about called California's Guide to the Trees Among Us, which is a book about trees that you would see on the streets and parks and gardens and cities. But always in the background of that, I was very interested in what are the trees native to California. California trees, as you guys know, are superlatives. We have the biggest, the oldest, the tallest trees, all that type of thing. And it's really hard not to be interested in that if you're a plant guy. And then I just have been lucky. I got to teach a class at Cal Poly over the last 20 years called Field Botany, in which I take 40 students in vans all over California. We camp with them and we teach them. Well, I just finished in the quarter now, and we taught them 466 different species of native plants in California, and got to see a bunch of the trees and get out into these awesome habitats. And so I just always thought, this book needs to exist. It didn't exist. Willis Lynn Jepson, sort of California's first botanist, wrote a version of it about 100 years ago. And I always thought this needs to be updated. And so I was slowly working on it. And then, like Michael said, being able to connect with him and get the conifers and the Northern California trees and expertise from him, it really came together to make this great book.
And just so you know, I really love this book. When I first got it, I thought, oh, that's cool. And then I started to thumb through it and I thought, this is fantastic. And I can tell you, this book is going to be going in my Subaru. Whenever I go on a trip, this is going with me because it's really a nice size book. It's very user friendly. It's very well organized. So I'd like to ask you about, you know, thinking about that. One of the hardest things to do a project like this is you have all this expertise, you have all this knowledge. But maybe, Michael, this is a good question for you since you're a publisher. How do you figure out the best way to format and organize a book like this? Because it's really well done.
Yeah, thanks so much. That's kind words there. We appreciate that. You know, it was a little bit of back and forth to start, really. You know, we wanted basically to give every tree a page, and a couple of trees get two pages. But, you know, we wanted to figure out how can we convey as much information in one page with, you know, colorful images and then incorporating these range maps that were built for the book. So it didn't take long, I don't think. I think it was maybe a couple of days of back and forth. But things just seemed to fit perfectly. You know, we like the idea of a big common name, the Latin name underneath that, some content about the tree, its relationship to the California landscape. And then once I pop that range map in, there's that area of Nevada that is not in the maps because it's a California tree book, but it fit well with some basic information. So we put tree height, tree DBH. These are all average numbers we wanted to put in, the needle or the leaf shape, and then what the flower or the cone look like. And then that left really almost two thirds of the page for pictures and a quick ID tip. So I think it just, you know, with Matt and I's graphic design prowess going back and forth, we found a fine medium of content and pictures.
And one of the first things you tackle in the book, which is one you might not think of this, but I often do, is the question of what exactly is a tree? Because it's kind of like, you know, some certain things, you know one when you see one. But are you certain? Is that a tree or is it a shrub? Could you maybe address that a little bit, Matt? Because that was kind of a neat little piece in the beginning of the book about what is a tree.
Sure, we grappled with that a lot. And any tree book grapples with that because there is no clear definition in any literature between a tree and a shrub. And we came up with our own and then started to categorize all these trees in California as to whether or not they fit into that category or not. I'll tell you, our definition was that for a thing to be considered a tree, over about 90% of the total known or surveyed individuals in the species had to mature to a height of over 20 feet tall. They had to have a single dominant trunk, and then which was more than 6 inches in diameter at about 4.5 feet above the ground. And so what that excludes are a bunch of iconic plants in California, the toyon being an example of one of them. You know, this is an iconic shrub. Everybody knows it. And it didn't make the book. It did make a portion of the book. And so when we made this decision, by the way, we came up with 95 species. That's how many species of trees there are in California. And we published this table towards the end of the book that says these are iconic shrubs in California that are not trees. And so we were really clear about what we considered a tree and what we considered to not be a tree, because what we didn't want people doing is looking up for their most favorite tree, which was actually a shrub, and seeing that we didn't include it in the book or being confused by that, so they can find it in the table of iconic shrubs. You know, most of California is this Mediterranean climate where it's hot and dry for 8 months out of the year. And that just selects for smaller plants, shrubbier, woody plants that don't grow into these massive trees. And we have this beautiful map in the book that was published for the first time in a book, at least, which is it's one of the first maps in the book. This is a...
Yeah. It's really cool because it kind of shows you with colors. I think I'm looking at the same yep. map that, you know, kind of like a weather map, you know, a temperature map in a way where
yeah,
the colors, where the colors indicate for you. Yeah. It's a heat map yep. where, you know, the hotter temperatures basically in the map, those are where your highest density of native trees are. That's really cool.
Yeah. You know, the thing with these range maps that Michael's talking about, these new range maps that were made for this book, where we scoured every record and we went out and we looked where these trees occur, is that these range maps were all done in GIS. So we could overlay 95 range maps and create this really cool heat map. And the point I was trying to make is that where you have the highest tree diversity in California is where there's the largest amount of rain. And so water is required to make big trees. It's a violation of the laws of physics, really, to get a big tree in the absence of water. And so what we have in California is areas that are wetter, mountainsides, the foothills and lower elevation areas, the Sierra Nevada, western portion of Sierra Nevada. That's where that you get a lot of tree diversity, and that map shows that. So what's left, though, is in Western California is chaparral and rolling hills of coastal scrub, which are mostly not trees, but there are many iconic plants. So that's why we listed them.
Very cool. And then another thing I like about the organization is you kind of start out with regional the places of California, because California is so huge and has so much diversity. You know, it's so different from one end of the state to the next. So you break down all of these different, you know, areas like the Sonoran Desert, the Mojave Desert, the Great Basin, et cetera, and Sierra Nevada, Klamath. And I like that, because then you can kind of go by region and see what makes these regions special and what are some of the cool trees there. So I like that. And I'd like to maybe talk about, you know, ask you about these regions and maybe have you pick out a few key interesting tree species there. So you ready?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, let's start down in the desert, because most people don't associate deserts with trees, although there's the iconic Joshua tree. Let's start with the Sonoran Desert. Tell us about that a little bit.
Well, okay, so Sonoran Desert and the California portion of the Sonoran Desert, which we call the Colorado Desert, sort of the northwestern portion of the of a much larger Sonoran Desert, this portion that's in California, has some really, really interesting tree species. And for instance, our only native species of palm is there. Washingtonia fulifera, the California fan palm, occurs in these oases in the Sonoran Desert in California, and so they just make spectacular habitats. I told you about this class that I teach called field botany. Well, we were in one of those Washingtonia oases recently, and there it was a creek running through the desert where all these palms were, and there was orchids underneath it. Really spectacular and beautiful habitats. Yeah, one of my favorite trees is California's only native palm tree.
Oh, that's cool. Okay, and another desert region, and one very familiar to me growing up in Southern California, the Mojave.
Yeah, I'll take the Mojave. The thing that I think is compelling tree-wise about the Mojave is that the elevations get a lot higher than the Sonoran Desert. So when you start getting up into that 5,000-7,000-foot range, which you can in certain mountains like the Granite Mountains, the New York Mountains, the Clark Mountains, you have what we call sky islands that host a wide number of particularly conifers in this instance. And then obviously, as you mentioned, in those sort of 4,000-6,000-foot ranges, you get the Joshua trees. And then there's often this mixing ground at the southern edge of the Mojave and the northern edge of the Sonoran, where you get a crossover of some of the species that are found more in the Sonoran but creep into the Mojave, like mesquite, ironwood. So yeah, the Mojave is, you know, it's an interesting place because this is a great fact that my friend Jim Andre, who runs the Desert Research Station in the Grand Mountains, told me. If the Mojave Desert was a state and you could map its flora and list the species, it would be the eighth richest species in terms of plants of any state. So we think of desert, and we think of stark, and we think of, you know, very few plants, but really it's the opposite. The Mojave Desert is amazingly biodiverse, and that's also reflected in trees.
Yeah, it's amazing to think of when you look out at a desert like the Mojave. It does look like, you know, well, there's not that much here. But when you really get into it and spend some time there, it's just an amazingly diverse place with so many interesting life forms of all kinds. The desert's just amazing.
Yeah, and then you creep up from the Mojave, you get a little further north, and you get into our snowy or cold desert called the Great Basin Desert. Mm-hmm. And this is where you can find many of those conifers that were in the Mojave Sky Islands, but also much more densely populated. And then the oldest living non-clonal organism on Earth, the bristlecone pine in the White Mountains of California. So we have three desert regions in California.
Let's take a moment because we'll talk about all of the really iconic trees. But let's take a moment now, since you mentioned the bristlecone. For people who are not aware, this is really one of California's treasures, isn't it?
Yeah, so the bristlecone is this ancient lineage of pine. Fossil records put it emerging somewhere in what we now call Nevada about 40 million years ago. And there are three forms of this tree in the West. We have the Great Basin bristlecone pine. We have the Rocky Mountain bristlecone pine, which does not occur in California. But we also have the endemic foxtail pine. And these are all in the subsection Balfouriana. So this is, again, this group that's been sculpted by deep time evolution, but now is restricted to basically the highest elevation mountaintops in California, with some restrictions. Like they're not necessarily spread all through the Sierra Nevada, but the foxtail pines love the southern Sierra Nevada because it's a little bit drier down there, right? And maybe less competition from firs and hemlocks at those high elevations. And then the Klamath Mountains has the Klamath Mountain foxtail pine, which is a similar sort of distribution where it grows in these high places that it, you know, doesn't have to compete again with firs and hemlocks. And then there's the Great Basin bristlecone pine, which is the oldest of those three species. It gets up to almost 5,000 years old. The foxtail pines get to about 1,000. At least those are the oldest ones that have been bored and dated at this point by dendrochronologists. But the bristlecone pine, the Great Basin bristlecone pine, four times older than that, right? 5,000 years. And this is the one that you can see in the White Mountains. If you drive up out of Big Pine and get up into the Methuselah Grove and some of the other fine groves of the White Mountains, just absolutely spectacular. All three of these species, in my opinion, but the bristlecone is sort of gets the glory because it gets so darn old.
Yeah. And that Methuselah tree and the Patriarch Grove up there in the White Mountains, it's just fascinating to go, you know, and touch those trees, you know, all of them, and realize, you know, how many thousands of years that those things have been there, and all the history that's gone on in the earth, you know, for human history. It's just astounding to think of, you know, when those little things, you know, just first popped out of their cone and became a tree to now. It's mind-boggling. And the views up there of the Sierra Nevada are pretty spectacular.
Oh, yeah. It's one of the premier destinations in California, speaking of your road trip to put the book in the car for. And I think what's exceptional and what's important to understand about those areas is they're low in pathogens, right? There's not a lot of fungal pathogens that are going to live in these arid, high elevation landscapes. So the trees don't have, you know, things that are going to kill them as easily as maybe in wetter areas. And they're obviously very well adapted to this arid landscape. So they're good at conserving water. They keep their needles forever. I've heard possibly up to upwards of 50 years they can retain these needles. They're thick and waxy, so they retain water. And, you know, unfortunately, there are now, because of the warming climate, there are bark beetles that are moving upslope into some of these stands. Telescope Peak in Death Valley National Park is a bristlecone pine holdout. And the mountain pine beetles have been detected now by Connie Millar in those stands. So they are in decline, and we can only hope that there's some solutions in the near future for their preservation and stewardship.
It's such a cool species that we did put it on the cover of the book. It's the
I was just going to say it's your cover photo.
It is a beautiful cover photo of a very old individual, and like Michael said, it's these groves are accessible. You can drive up 10,000-11,000 feet. Michael, you'll think this is funny. Somebody said to me recently that it's so harsh conditions up there, and the growing season is so short that not only aren't very many pathogens, there's very few to zero non-native plants. And in the cover photo, which is a big landscape of the tree in it, there are no non-native plants in that whole thing. And very rarely could you see a photo of a large portion of California without some non-native in the photo somewhere.
Oh, wow. That's cool. We're going to take a short break, but stay with us. When we come back, we'll continue our look at California's native trees with Michael Kaufman and Matt Ritter, authors of the new book, California Trees, A Field Guide to the Native Species. I'm Dave Schlohm, and you are listening to Blue Dot. And we're back, and thanks for listening to Blue Dot. Let's continue now as we look at the diversity and beauty of California's trees with Michael Kaufman and Matt Ritter, authors of the new book, California Trees, A Field Guide to the Native Species. And one of the interesting things that's very useful, you know, for me as I look at this to put things in perspective is for each region, like we're going to move on to the Southern California mountains, it tells you what percentage this is of California. In this case, it's 8% of California. And then it tells you how many native trees there are in this. And you can, it's very interesting to look at for Southern California's mountains, for example, pretty small percentage of the state at 8%. But a lot of native trees at 36. So let's talk about what makes the Southern California mountains so special.
Yeah, so this would be, I'll take this one, Michael. This is the transverse range and the peninsular range. It goes up from San Diego into Los Angeles, like you were saying. It's just a ton of diversity. And also endemic trees, trees that you don't get to see anywhere else outside California, not even outside of the Southern California mountains. And an example of one of those would be the big cone Douglas fir, which is the cousin of the Doug fir that's all over California. This thing only occurs in Southern California mountains and the transverse range and in the peninsular range. We have one of our rarest oaks in California occurs in these areas as well. That's Quercus engelmannii, the Engelmann oak. And that occurs basically from San Diego, just slightly over the border, up into Pasadena and nowhere else in California in the world. So not only is it a small portion of California, there's a lot of species, but it's also a biodiversity hotspot.
And it's just absolutely astounding to think about how much biodiversity there is so close to the city of Los Angeles.
Yeah, the Southern California walnut is a good example of that. This is a small walnut tree that occurs just in the mountains around Los Angeles. And that is a thing that, you know, it's such an urban tree. It's protected in many areas. I think it's a protected species in Los Angeles County now. And that's a tree that you only get to see in that area.
The last thing about these transverse ranges is it's such a stark elevational gradient that you go from, you know, basically sea level to 10,000 feet in many of these mountain ranges. So you have that wide range of habitats too. So that helps facilitate diversity.
Yeah. Okay. Well, sticking with Southern California into Central California, the Southern coast. And again, you know, it's not a huge chunk of California, although pretty big. 12% of California is a lot of land, but also a lot of trees, 44 native trees on the southern coast, and a lot of iconic species when you talk about, you know, along the coast from the Monterey cypress to the Torrey pines. Tell us about some of the cool trees there.
Well, I'll take that since that's where I live. You know, we're right here in the center of that area in San Luis Obispo. And yeah, you said iconic trees, the Monterey cypress, the Monterey pine. There's an endemic fir in Big Sur as part of this region, the Santa Lucia fir. Ecologically, the southern coast of California is this Mediterranean area that that has a lot of chaparral, a lot of coastal scrub, but along with it, some really cool species of oaks, a couple of species of conifers. The foothill pine is one that gets into the area as well. And then these coastal conifers. We got a number of coastal conifers in California. And you mentioned the Torrey pine, which is one of the rarest pine trees in the world. I think there's just over 3,000 individuals living in the wild. It's got a small population in near Torrey Pines in San Diego, and another one on the Santa Barbara Channel Islands. And so it's a cool species, and an interesting thing about that species is that it reproduces on its own like a weed in some areas of California, like around Fort Ord in Monterey County. They have actually an issue with the Torrey Pine spreading out in the areas where they're planted and out competing some native plants in that area. So this is a really complicated and interesting story in which you have this very rare native tree in its range, and then it's expanding in other parts of California. Hmm.
What makes the Southern California coast up into the Central Coast all the way basically to the Bay Area? What is it, do you think, about that place that makes it so unique as far as biodiversity goes?
Well, one thing that makes it unique as far as the biodiversity goes, if you think about where the population of California is, the population of centers of California are basically from Sacramento down to the Bay Area, along the south coast of California, through Los Angeles and into San Diego. So that's where all the people are. Sorry to leave out Chico there, Dave,
I don't live in Chico. You can do that.
Most of the population of California is in that area. And so a tree like the coast live oak, which is this really urban tree, grows from Sonoma County down to Tijuana, basically. And that tree occurs in the range of about 40 million people. And so therefore, it's very culturally important. It's the namesake of towns like Thousand Oaks and Oakland and all these different places, because people are living amongst these trees in that part of California.
Yeah. Well, okay, you mentioned Chico, which is really a great place for trees, and the entire Central Valley, which is a huge chunk of California. It's big, you know, 15% of California's land, which is a lot, but only 16 native trees, which does not surprise me. However, my neighborhood, for example, we have these just magnificent patriarch and matriarch valley oaks that are truly huge. They're one of my favorite trees.
One of my favorite trees too. I mean, I grew up in Northern California in a low-lying valley in a population of valley oaks, and it was one of the trees that really got me interested in trees in general. It's one of the largest oak trees in the world. Interesting thing about the valley oak is that you don't find the valley oak except on low-lying valley floors in alluvial plains where the soil is very rich and the groundwater is very high, and so many populations of valley oaks in California are old. So just old, like the ones you described, old, big individuals without a lot of reproduction going on. And we actually know less than we'd like to know about the original range of that tree, because pretty quickly when people arrived in California during the first European incursions into California, they realized that, oh, the valley oak is an indicator of rich soil and high groundwater. That's where you want to do the agriculture. And so those trees were removed all over California and all over their range. And there it is a species, again, that only occurs in California from about Shasta in the north to the San Joaquin Valley. And actually, no, it gets down into the San Fernando Valley. But throughout that whole range, people realized, oh, this is where we need to remove these trees and plant fields and do all of that.
Those valley oaks are truly iconic, and there's some very famous ones, like one that was in our hometown, Chico, California, where this show is produced. Tell us about that tree.
Yeah, well, so this is this massive valley oak that was that grew in Chico. I think it was actually named by Annie Bidwell, who of the name of the Bidwell Mansion in Chico, who named it after this hero of hers, Joseph Hooker, who was a botanist and a British botanist and director of the Royal Botanical Gardens. And it was such a big tree. They threw these parties. They counted the number of people that could stand under the tree, and it grew until I think it fell down and fell apart ultimately in the late 1970s, early 1980s. And there was rumors about the tree being 800 years old, 1,000 years old. Some people said as much as 2,000 years old. And then in the 1980s, when it eventually fell apart and they were able to cut it down and count the rings, it was only 325 years old. This was one of the biggest ones known in California. It just goes to show that these species grow really fast. They get really big. A 100-year-old valley oak can be a really big thing. And this one was particularly old at 325 years old. Nothing near the age of the bristlecone pines that Michael was just talking about at 4,000 years old and things like that. But they get really big really quickly because they're growing in so much water and such rich soil. And it was kind of a burn on everyone that they'd estimated this tree to be four or five times older than it actually was.
Oh, that's interesting. And there are other cool trees in the valley besides just our great valley oaks, which are the champs. We've got some other neat trees too, like the sycamores, which are very messy, but they're beautiful trees. Any others you want to mention that are interesting valley trees?
Yeah, well, the Northern California black walnut is a good one. The tree that the city of Walnut Creek is named after, and that is an endemic species to Northern California and out into the valleys and around Walnut Creek, and then it was brought by humans before Europeans in California, all over California, and there's the oldest, biggest individuals now were likely planted several hundred years ago, and there are really massive ones around Chico, the current known state and national champion. This is Juglans hinsii that I'm referring to, is just outside Chico. I have the honor and the privilege of being the California state coordinator for the National Big Tree Registry. And so what that means is that people go and find the biggest individual of every species, and there's tree hunters out there, and then they do these nominations, and then I get to go confirm whether it's actually that species and if actually their measurements are the right size. And Michael's nominated a bunch of conifers, and we know where the largest individuals are of most of our 95 native species. At least we know we have a record for which one that is. But people are finding new ones all the time. And so with that Northern California black walnut, they are really impressive trees and all out there in the low-lying valley areas around Chico.
Okay, well, let's move on to the mountains of California, the Sierra Nevada. They are, again, a biodiversity hotspot. I see that there's 41 native trees there. And, of course, probably the most iconic tree of California, you know, which is hard to say which one. We got so many, but you can't go too wrong with the great sequoias.
Yeah, this is where I first fell in love with California trees. My parents took me to the Mariposa Grove in Yosemite, and gosh, it must have been 1989, and they weren't sure they were going to get me back after that. I just disappeared into wandering through giant sequoias, and then I was fortunate to live in the southern Sierra Nevada for a couple of years, teaching at an outdoor science school, and climbing up into the high country of the Sierra Nevada there is where I met my first foxtail pine, which is my personal favorite tree species on planet Earth. So exactly like you said, you know, sort of like the transverse ranges, you've got that low elevation foothills all the way up to 14,000 feet on Mount Whitney. And there's basically trees all the way up to those, 12,500 feet, I would say, is as high as you can get trees in the southern Sierra Nevada. So you've got that vast elevational gradient, lots of diversity, endemic trees, and then a long, skinny, granitic range that goes all the way to Tahoe. So things change and transition towards the Cascades and some of the species that are common there.
And there's all kinds of interesting trees besides our great sequoias. And could maybe pick out a few others that are pretty cool in the Sierra Nevada.
Yeah, I'm particularly excited about one right now, and that's the Juniperus grandis, the Sierra juniper. And the Sierra juniper it's got red bark, just like the giant sequoia. They're really big and impressive trees. They occur in high elevation. There's one called the Bennett juniper, which you can go and visit, and we have a photo of it in the book and so on. But interestingly, even though we have a photo of it in the book and we talk about it a little bit, neither Michael nor I have actually seen it in person. This is the largest known individual of this species, an incredible tree. And we're going to get to go see it in early July. This is like what stokes Michael and I out, as we get to meet and go find a tree and go look at the Bennett juniper for the first time. And so I'm really excited about that species, the Sierra juniper.
Yeah, they're really beautiful. And they do kind of look like baby sequoias. How I might just, you know, describe them. JV sequoias. They're the junior varsity team, but they're really cool looking.
I like that.
They also have that really neat, gnarly looking bark that you can tell that they get to be pretty old.
Yep.
And then as you go north, we're kind of in Michael's neck of the woods, if you will. Let's move on to the North Coast. What are some trees there that are famous, Michael? I have no idea. There might be this thing kind of looks like a sequoia, but maybe taller. Or I forget.
Yeah, I think what's great about the North Coast is this is where California flora starts creeping into the Pacific Northwest, and we get the influence from the north. basically down to Humboldt County. I say where we live here, I live in coastal Humboldt County, is the southern tip of the Great Pacific Northwest temperate rainforest. So we have species that come in here, like the tree of life, Thuja plicata, the western red cedar, western hemlock, and grand fir. But then we also have the northern range extension of the redwood, which you were alluding to. And the redwoods here—
That's what they're called.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. They've got that redwood, Sequoia sempervirens, kind of the California coastal classic tree. And within Humboldt and Del Norte counties, we basically have some of the largest above what they call this is above ground biomass. So this is basically the massive trees, not including roots, because those are pretty hard to measure. Scientists haven't quite figured that out. But we have the most above ground biomass up here of any place on planet Earth.
Wow.
So these trees are not only tall, but massive in volume. And the tallest tree, of course, is in Humboldt County. And that was just remeasured a few weeks ago at 382 feet and I think 4 inches. So this tree was discovered, quote unquote, 10 or 15 years ago using the LIDAR technology. It was about 379 feet. So in 15 or 20 years, this tree's put on 3 more feet. And then, like I mentioned, up in Del Norte County, particularly in Jedediah Smith Redwoods State Park, there's a new trail that will take you into the Grove of the Titans, which became famous in Richard Preston's book, The Wild Trees, a few years back. And it was kind of one of these places where they said, oh, you'll never be able to find it. Well, people found it. So they decided to put a trail into it. And you can see some amazing trees. And Matt and I have been in there. And one of the most exceptional is called the Del Norte Titan, which I believe, Matt, correct me if I'm wrong, is the largest volume redwood tree on Earth.
Yep. Something like 37,000 cubic feet. It basically has no taper at all. It's just a massive trunk going up to about 100 feet and then continues up. It's an over 300 foot tall tree. One of the most impressive individuals of that species.
And the redwood forest, of course, you know, it's so iconic. Woody Guthrie made it famous in the song, "This Land Is Our Land." You know, it's an important tree when it makes it into the Woody Guthrie song.
Definitely. And it's such a great park to visit, Redwood National Park in particular, Prairie Creek Redwoods National Park. It's kind of like a step back in time in national park style. I get to work up there in the spring. I work for Save the Redwoods League and lead field trips. And just to see the small volume of people that come to that park from all over the world. I've ran into people from China this week, Tasmania a few weeks ago. I mean, it's the people know that this is the spot to come and see big trees, and yet it's still kind of a simple place, you know, small parking lot. You park along the road if it gets crowded, and then hundreds of miles of trails, which is exceptional. It's a really beautiful place to get to visit. And Matt and I kind of touch on that at the end of the book, places to see these trees, and maybe we'll talk about that a little bit later.
We're going to take a short break, but stay with us as we continue our look at California's native trees with Cal Poly botany professor Matt Ritter and Northern California tree expert and Backcountry Press publisher Michael Kaufman. I'm Dave Shlohm, and you are listening to Blue Dot. And we're back, and thanks for listening. Let's continue now as we examine California's amazing trees with Michael Kaufman and Matt Ritter, authors of the new book, California Trees, A Field Guide to the Native Species. Like some other places, one special place we're going to mention pretty soon, the northern coast, again, very high biodiversity is indicated by the number of native trees. You're talking 8% of California and 46 native tree species. That's a lot.
It is a lot. It's about half, right? A little bit less than half of all the species can be found in that area.
Any other favorite trees besides the redwoods and are the ones you want to mention up there? Because there's just so many cool ones.
Well, another one that I'm starting to kind of fall in love with here recently is a flowering tree. It's called the giant chinkapin. Chrysolepis chrysophylla. And they're, I think they were harvested pretty heavily once Europeans arrived, but there's still a few pockets of these trees, and they grow all the way down to Santa Cruz, but they're kind of clandestine. They don't, they creep in different forest types. Sometimes you'll see them in these pure stands, but it's in the oak family. But it doesn't necessarily look like an oak at first inspection, and they can get really stinking big. I think 150 feet tall and diameter breast height approaching 4 feet. And they just have this beautiful hard wood and a colorful leaf on the underside in particular. And then actually a pretty dangerous seed pod if you catch them in the fall and accidentally slip and put your hand on one. It'll puncture your skin. It's kind of a bristly protective seed pod. So anyway, I'm becoming a new fan of this flowering tree, the giant chinkapin.
I love that tree too. It's always a surprise when you find one, and they're surprisingly big. In the Sierra, we have the Chrysolepis sempervirens, which is a bush chinkapin, a much smaller version of the same thing. But to be able to be familiar with the bush chinkapin and then see on the North Coast the giant chinkapin, it's always to me wonderful and surprising.
And then, Michael, staying within your home range and something you know very well and we've talked about before on this program, the Klamath Mountains, very tiny percentage, 7% of California, and yet, boom, 46 native trees. That's astonishing.
Oh, it's the biodiversity hotspot of the state and really, in a lot of ways, the temperate regions of North America. And Matt mentioned the heat map that was produced, and this particular spot in Western Siskiyou County or Eastern Siskiyou County, sort of rose to the surface when Cammie Pollock, who helped Matt with the maps, overlaid all of the range maps for every tree in California. 26 or 24 species are in this one little corner of Siskiyou County. And that's the heat map that we talked about earlier. I guess it's 24 species.
24.
And yeah. 24. And, you know, this is again sort of this crossroads of different environments where you get the influence of the Cascades to the north, the Great Basin to the east, the Sierra Nevada and the Coast Range to the south. And then, you know, you've got the endemism of the Klamath Mountains itself, which I went into some great detail on some of series of Blue Dot podcasts when we published our book, The Klamath Mountains and Natural History. But it's this intermixing of flowering trees and conifers and really just an endemism as well. Like we mentioned, these trees that grow nowhere else, like the foxtail pine. But I think the real place to mention as well that's very close to this area that was pulled out in the heat map is the Miracle Mile of conifers, which is up in the Russian wilderness in the Salmon Mountains to the west of the Scott Valley and Etna and Fort Jones. And this particular spot has been known for a long time by ecologists. And it turns out that there are 16, or at the time when it was first sort of defined, 16 species of conifers in 1 square mile, and a 17th has been added to that list. So just an amazing assemblage of conifers, unlike anywhere else on planet, in a temperate region on planet Earth. Right there in the heart of the Klamath Mountains.
Yeah, it's quite astounding. Well, we've already spent lots of time on the Klamaths, but they are definitely worth noting because of that diversity and the number of native species. And just looking at the heat map and that number just kind of boggles my mind. Okay, well, let's finish up with, in my neck of the woods, the Cascades. And I'll tell you my favorite tree in Lassen Volcanic National Park. You want to try to guess what it is?
Aspen.
The ponderosa pine.
Nope. The mountain hemlock.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
And you know what? For a couple of reasons, it's where the mountain hemlocks are right around Lassen Peak, at very high elevation. They're very cool looking trees. We up in the park for many years have called them our Dr. Seuss trees because they look like, you know, something out of a Dr. Seuss book. And I recall in the mountains of California, John Muir writing about them, that he was very impressed by the groves of mountain hemlocks around Lassen. And so those are my favorite tree in the Cascades. But I was wondering if maybe you guys tell us about some of yours.
Well, I also love mountain hemlock. It's always, you know, with the drooping tip on it, and you can just like picture them immediately when you. It's one of those easy trees to identify there because it's in these cool groves with their always with the drooping tips.
And I'll add that they are growing like gangbusters right now in this time of climate change. They, if you next time you're up in the high country of Lassen or in the Cascades, just look for how many saplings and seedlings there are. And this is because of decreased snowpack and probably the more rapid melting of snow earlier, giving that area a higher or a longer growing season. But I agree, they are absolutely spectacular. One of my favorites, if not my favorite in the Cascades, is the whitebark pine.
Mm-hmm.
And they are, I had this probably the best job I'll ever had back starting around 2014, where I got to basically pick mountaintops that were high enough and climb those mountaintops and look for white bark pine. And it's kind of the true sky islands of the Cascades. Like you get up onto these peaks that are above 7,000, 7,500 feet, and you're in that subalpine, almost into the alpine zones. Like on Mount Shasta has the only true alpine in California, but you can get up in onto those peaks and you can see that sky island relic, the white bark pine that gets carried around from mountaintop to mountaintop by the Clark's Nutcracker, with which it has this special relationship. The seeds of the white bark pine don't have these wings, so they can't get blown off away from the mother tree, so to speak. And the Clark's Nutcrackers gather those seeds and then cache them in the ground. And they have this amazing spatial memory. They might cache 20,000 seeds for the winter, and then they can go back and find those caches and feed themselves through the harsh winters in the Cascades. And then sometimes they don't need all those seeds. So when those seeds sprout in the spring and then they grow into adults, they're often in these clusters of 6, 10, 12, 15 saplings growing from the same spot. So you can really see that relationship that the tree has with this special bird, the Clark's Nutcrackers and the crow family, and just renowned again for their spatial memory.
And some of my favorite trees in the mountains of Northern California are just really beautiful are the big madrone trees and the dogwood trees, the Pacific dogwood when they're flowering. That always is just so beautiful to me.
I saw the Pacific dogwood recently at McKinley Grove of the giant sequoia grove in the southern Sierra Nevada, and the Pacific dogwood's in full bloom with the red bark of the of the giant sequoias behind them. It's an amazing view. I think I took like 200 photos. I don't know, which is what you do when you get that situation.
Dogwoods are cool. We've got quite a few species of dogwoods in California. It's actually comparable to the dogwood diversity in the Eastern Appalachian Mountains, but they don't reach tree size. So we have, I think it's 4 shrubby or sub-shrub species of dogwood, and then one that actually becomes a tree. And I agree that, they start as early as April. You can see those giant flowers. Of course, the flower itself isn't very big. It's got, what is it, a showy bract that it, that
matters? That's right. Yeah, big white bract.
Yeah. Cool stuff, though.
They're very pretty. When we talk about flowering trees, and one of the cool things about the organization of the book, again, is you've got a big section on all our conifers and then a big section on the flowering trees. And one of the ones I ran into there, and I never thought about it, but I guess that's a tree, is the giant saguaro cactus. That's a tree?
That certainly is a tree. And in any definition of tree, in the sense that it's got a massive trunk, it's got this canopy of branches above ground, and they're very impressive. And the giant saguaro, as you know, is real dominant around areas like Tucson and Phoenix, and it gets into California, but only barely into California, just around the town of Blythe and sort of in the Sonoran Desert. But the northwestern edge of its range is right there in California.
Well, you know, when you put together something like this, which is really, really well executed, guys, you have to have a lot of help. Can you tell us about some of the people you worked with along the way that were helpful in producing this great book?
Sure. Well, one of those is, Michael mentioned her name, is Cami Pollock. She's currently a PhD student at UCLA, a modern day cartographer. She was a master's student of mine over the last few years, and she published some really great papers about California native trees and where they were with regards to cities. And that led us down the route of producing these highly refined, really beautiful GIS-based species range maps. And so all the analysis and the heat map that we talked about and all that was because of the work of Cami.
You know, I want to thank my high school biology teacher because he was my gateway into trees. His name is Charles Dupe. And he basically inspired me to love nature, you know, and I really appreciate all the early teachers in people's career that bring that to the table for folks. But that's what Matt and I wanted to do with this. And I think it's important to reflect on how we get there. How do we get more people to love trees?
Well, Matt Ritter and Michael Kaufman, authors of the brand new book, California Trees, A Field Guide to the Native Species from Backcountry Press. Thanks for joining us on Blue Dot and producing this really cool book.
Yeah, thanks.
It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks again to our guests, Michael Kaufman, publisher of Backcountry Press and research plant ecologist, along with Matt Ritter, botany and ecology professor at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. Their new book, California Trees, A Field Guide to the Native Species from Backcountry Press, is definitely a worthy addition to any Golden State nature lover's bookshelf and backpack. It's available at backcountrypress.com or from your favorite bookseller. Blue Dot is a production of North State Public Radio, a service of Cap Radio in beautiful and talented Northern California. We're distributed by PRX. If you want to revisit, share, or check out past episodes, you can do just that on our website, mynspr.org. While you're at it, subscribe to our podcast so you never miss an episode on our website, the NPR One app, or wherever you get your podcast groove on. Our theme music, Big Wave Dave, is by Matt Schiltz. Blue Dot is engineered and produced by the maestro, Matt Fidler. For all of us here, I remind you there that from deep space, we all live on a pale blue dot.